pad up. It's the Australian Cricket Podcast, and here are your hosts.
That'll be 150. Lovely innings, that.
Welcome to the Australian Cricket Podcast. I'm your host, Manners, and this is the 150th episode of the podcast all about Australian cricket. I'm so thrilled to have made it to 150 episodes, and this week I have three guest panellists joining me for this special occasion. Now, the first panellist is self-described as a musician, anarchist, cricket pundit, podcaster, friend, and gamer. Now, I just searched through his Twitter feed for a little way down and found this from last week, and it says, Kane Williamson is life, hashtag South Africa for New Zealand, hashtag stranded. Welcome back to the show, Kiwi Bob Williamson.
Absolutely. pleasure to be here. Thanks for having us, Menas. What can I say? That's slightly embarrassing now.
It's your Twitter, buddy. You wrote it.
Yeah, it probably does need an update. But what a pleasure to be here, celebrating the highs and lows of Australian cricket. And for long may it continue, let's bring up the double ton.
Yeah, definitely. Plenty more shows to come. Now, returning is a sports writer and all-round sports junkie who recently had a commentary stint and punctuated his commentary by saying about Tom O'Donnell, bats left or right-handed. So, Gav, what about Tom O'Donnell? Do we know? Does he bat left or right-handed now?
Well, if you read an interesting article that was published during the week, they're talking about how batsmen can bat with both hands. So I think Tom O'Donnell was the start of it. I
know bat with both hands or bat from both sides?
Bat with both hands.
Well, okay, most bats would bat with both hands. welcome back to the show, Gav. How are you, buddy?
I'm well, mate. Good to be in transit. I'm back up to Queensland next week, but doing a lot of A-series and keeping an eye out on some of the young cricketers.
And returning for his second show is a French and English broadcaster, written sports journalist. He's a leading English-speaking expert on Sepak Takraw. He's written on his Twitter feed, be prepared to learn about cricket on here, though. So he's a man of many talents. Drew Lilly, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Manners. Pleasure to be here.
Now, you're our international panellist, but look, I'm sorry to start off on this terms, but after the last show, you're on a pretty short leash. If you bring the English cricket team up at an inappropriate moment, I'm just going to turn your mic down while you're talking about them. So just wait for the right minute to talk about the English cricket team. And I guess the same goes with you, Bob, about the Kiwi cricket team.
But Kane Williamson.
Oh, God, okay. I'm going to pull your mic out. Well, no, Drew, welcome back to the show. Thank you.
English cricket.
Well, we've got a massive show today. We've got lots of panellists. We're going to talk about the tremendous series victory in the one-day internationals. We have a commentator critique. We have a sledging quiz. And we're going to finish it all off with our new Read and React segment. But let's start off with the Australian one-day side. They have sealed the series in Sri Lanka 4-1. It was closer than it actually appears. Most of the games were a lot tighter for Australia chasing. But I want to ask all of you, why is it that Australia can do so well on the subcontinent in one-day cricket but can't translate into the test form?
Pitches probably have something to do with it. This series, I think.
But the pitches were turning square in the one-day.
They were turning square, but it's completely different. You're looking at just one day. You're getting 100 overs in a day. That's totally different when you come out and bat in the second day, the third day, the men around your bat. It's completely different. So that's one of the... And I think we have a lot of power hitters. And sometimes power hitters don't really have to succeed in the longer format. They generally, in the longer format, you need people who have to trust their defence, and that's what doesn't happen in the shorter format of the game.
Exactly. You've got David Warner saying twice, or it might have been the captain. First it was Steve Smith saying it, and then David Warner said exactly the same thing. You know, you're going to go out there and there's a ball with your name on it, and you're thinking, well, great, you know, they're going out there thinking, I'm going to get out pretty soon. And if you're doing that in a test match environment, then you're going to get out for a low score. Whereas they came out for the one-day internationals thinking, there's a ball out there with my name on it, but I'm going to get some runs before I do it. And they managed to get more runs than Sri Lanka did, simple as that.
Yeah, it's all fair points, I think. I mean, there's one thing I always I keep going back to, which is the mentality, right? So the top couple of inches, and Gav and Drew here hit the nail on the head. It's one-day cricket, less fielders, you know. It's much more structured, so you know what's coming. There's less surprises. and two new balls. They're going to stay harder for a little longer up front, and they're not going to do quite as much. And also, on that, slightly different personnel as well. If you look through the teams, five or six different players who weren't involved in the Test Series, so they were coming in fresh, and Australia is a very confident one-day team.
Yeah, it was a tremendous series victory, and I think it was built upon the bowlers, really. Australia had to chase in every game, and Australia's bowlers were able to restrict Sri Lanka in all but one of the games to very chaseable targets. So let's go back to the fourth one-day international, where Australia wrapped up the series in Dambulla. John Hastings was the star, taking 6 for 45. He's only the seventh Aussie to get a 6 for in one-day international cricket. And Sri Lanka were all out for 212. And John Hastings has been just about our second-best fast bowler in the one-day game this year. Absolutely dynamite stuff for him, going right back to the tour of New Zealand, and carried it on now, even after being out for a while with an injury. What a comeback.
Yeah, he looked great through the Big Bash as well. He's been a star, a real star. Like Gav said last week, I think, what we've seen with David Warner was just play to your strengths, you know. So you might think, oh, we're on the subcontinent, we need to play spinners. But at Sunrises Hyderabad, he went for his quicks, he backed his quicks, and I think he's done the same here. We saw with Boland and Stark and Hastings all getting a run. And I think the return to form of James Faulkner as well has been pretty good. But yeah, Hastings was incredible with his cutters and just change of pace and just keeping the batsman guessing.
Yeah, he's such a tall guy. He hits the deck hard. Now, it sounds like an understatement, but when you're actually doing that on a pitch that is slowing down, those cutters, they're actually a lot difficult to hit. If you look at John Hastings, if he bowls the same sort of length, it's quite easy to defend that. But when you're actually trying to score runs in the one-day format, that's when it brings the best out of John Hastings. So change of personnel, exactly what you sort of alluded to right at the start. Different personnel, but different format of the game. But his style of bowling, similar to James Faulkner, you bring him in, he bowls those cutters, really successful on those subcontinental style of pitches.
Would Hastings be able to translate this form into the Test arena? Could he be the third quick behind Stark and Hazelwood?
I don't know if he'd take enough wickets. The fact that we're saying he's 6 foot five, 16 stone, and he will bustle in and get, you know, for a maximum of 10 overs, maybe in a couple of spells, he will hit a good length, which is very difficult to get away. But in test match, on test match wickets, particularly if there's not a whole lot of life in there, it's really not going to work. People will just wait him out and he'll get tired and he'll stray down the leg side. They'll get runs off him. He's not a real wicket-taking threat. But here he was really cramping them for room because, as we say, 6 foot five, so his arm's coming down from about 8 feet in the air, and all of a sudden that's a different angle. It's more bounce on it.
That's like
it's
2 minutes, 8 feet in the air.
yeah, he could end up being very similar to like a Clint Mackay, who didn't really get the chance with the red ball, but with the white ball became one of the best bowlers in the world.
So Australia was set 213 to win. And it was one of the most amazing starts to any chase I've seen by the Australian side. We dashed to 100 after just 8.1 overs, which is the quickest ever Australia has got to 100 in a one-day international. It was amazing to watch. Aaron Finch was the chief destroyer. He smashed 15 off 18 balls, joining Simon O'Donnell and Glenn Maxwell as the record holders for the quickest ever half centuries for Australia in one-day cricket. But he was dead set on getting the world record. I think he had one or two balls to beat AB de Villiers' record, and he couldn't do it, which is such a shame. Would love to have your man, Aaron Finch, as the record holder, Bob. You've always been a staunch defender of Aaron Finch, and he's certainly come through in this series.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I was really confused last year as to why people were sort of... I guess it was that cluster of quality players at the top of the order. And so Finch was, in a lot of people's minds, he was the one to miss out. But he just keeps racking up numbers, and he does it fairly quietly as well. Like, I mean, this innings aside, but he's not the big million-dollar man like David Warner or Steve Smith. So he tends to slip under the radar, but he gets it done.
He's very smart about his cricket. If you look back how he's batted in the initial overs, he realises only two men are out. So even if you've got the spinners bowling at you, if you mistime one to a specific part of the ground, chances are you're not going to get caught. You're going to get away with it. And he takes that risk, and which is the right way to going ahead and batting in this sort of format. So it you talk about technique and so forth. This is just very smart, calculated batting.
Yeah, it's playing the percentages, isn't it? Because, you know, I mean, we can see with all five of these games, really. I mean, Sri Lanka's batted first. We haven't really seen how Australia would do opening the innings with the bat. But we have seen that after, say, 20 overs, scoring becomes much more difficult. And so new ball, field in, that's the time to go for it.
Yeah, Australia were in real trouble in this game. We lost three quick wickets after Finch went. Finch, Warner, and then Kawaja's nightmare tour continued, where Finch was given out LBW. He referred it. It was an umpire's call, so Australia lost their referral. Then Kawaja was given out LBW, which one that would have been saved had he had a referral left. So Kawaja was out. Australia lost 3 for 23. And George Bailey was out there, joined by Travis Head. And then Head was bowled off a no ball for 13. And if he'd been out there, you think Sri Lanka would have had a real chance, but instead, Head made 40 off 60, and George Bailey shepherded Australia in really tough conditions to a great victory. Hit 90 not out of 85 balls. George Bailey, the player of the series in this one-day series, and really has been so good under pressure the whole time. And I think for the young players in the side coming through, he's someone they should all look up to.
Well, going back to what we said earlier, how on earth can we lose 3-0 in the Test series and then we can totally turn it around? Oh, well, it's a change of personnel. And we mentioned that with the bowlers. The batsman as well, George Bailey, comes in, looks completely at ease, playing his sweeps and reverse sweeps, played the pitch, wasn't afraid of the... He wasn't going out there thinking, there's a ball with my name on it, I'm in trouble here. And he showed that in that innings there, and he faced twice as many balls as any other batsman, any other Australian batsman. And talking about, well, it's debates we've had before on this podcast, should we have, you know, pick horses for courses, and we should be having specialists playing when we're on the subcontinent? Definitely.
The impressive thing about George Bailey is that when you're trying to score runs, it's about finding a solution, whatever the solution is. And each person has its own solution. Matthew Hayden playing the sweep shot, Steve Smith, you know, using his feet to get down the pitch. Alastair Cook did it so well in India, just playing the sweep shot again. George Bailey is a one...
If Drew had said that, I'd have turned the mic down. Sorry, go on.
George Bailey has a solution. He's got no sort of past history about failing. He says, I've got to score runs. If I play reverse sweep first ball, that's fine. That's my method. And that's why he's succeeding. So perhaps, I think Rod Marsh has even stated that going ahead, looking at India 6 months down the track, that they will look at George Bailey very closely, and rightly so.
Yeah, I... totally up for that one. So Australia went 3-1 up in the series, moved to Palakkelly for the final game of the one-day series. And this is where I think it's what I noticed a nice tone in the Australian camp. They were really desperate to win the series 4-1 after the Gavia.
No, I was just going to say, before we go to Palakkelly, how good was Dan Buller to have people sitting up in trees and watching the cricket? It was fantastic, wasn't it?
It's beautiful. I love it.
Yeah, great ground, huge ground as well. One of the biggest grounds I've seen in Sri Lanka.
And I think they've got capacity 15, 20,000. They had 40,000 in there.
First game. Someone will be... That wouldn't happen in Australia. Well,
there you
sure.
go. One day cricket's definitely not dead in Dambulla.
Now let's move on to that fifth game in Palakkelly. Australia were desperately keen to win the series 4-1. Australia started badly. Sri Lanka got off to a good start. And interestingly, in the press conference afterwards, David Warner was scathing in his criticism of the Australian bowlers, saying that they started off like a great attack. Now, that's a really strong comment to come out in the press conference. And I'm not sure it's actually that sensible, maybe, to call your bowling attack a great attack. Maybe you can say it in the dressing room. What do you guys think?
It's because Mitchell Starc didn't take a wicket in the first over. Right, that's it. You're out. You're only as good as your last over.
No, but he was serious, though, comparing them to a great attack. And I just thought maybe that's one of the first cracks in his captaincy in this series. You want to probably hold that sort of comment for the dressing room. Am I being too harsh?
Maybe. I mean, I wasn't very impressed at all with the opening, with at least the first 15 overs in this most recent game last night. It was sloppy. Starc was very uncharacteristic in that he was reminding me of the Starc of 2 years ago. He was all over the place. He was just searching a little bit.
Maybe David Warner will cop a few bounces in the nets the next few days from probably, his fast bowlers.
Probably.
And a few sledges.
Yeah, whether it's accurate or not, the question is, you know, should that be public or private? And it's very hard for me to comment on that. I love to get the insight and I love to hear the honesty. And I'd much rather have the occasional slip up in a press conference than these old tired robotic.
Yeah, I agree in that sense.
I think last time might have been Darren Lehman that they spoke about Steve Smith not playing in Zimbabwe where he came out, but that was at the target of the selectors rather than bowlers. But Aaron Finch did say that after that second one day loss, that Darren Lehman really got stuck into some of his players. So maybe it was something that Darren Lehman had done, and maybe it was just a method that David Warner wanted to put it out in public as well to show what kind of captain he is, whether that's right or wrong, not sure. But
well, some captains will call out players to fire him up.
Yeah,
you know? I do it on the show all the time.
That's it. And the other thing is you've had, they've been, you know, they're not completely excluded from social media. They would have heard a lot of the feedback that came back from Australia after the Test Series, which was you overpaid, you know, entitled Muppets. Like, what are you doing? And so it was a little bit of, hey, guys, look, to the Australian public, look, we are taking this very goddamn seriously now.
The thing is, it came just as, you know, I'm sure we'll get onto this, the fact that Warner had finally got some runs in this series.
Yes.
And he hits a ton and then goes, right, and the bowlers are bloody lousy, weren't they? hey, good job I was there.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Well, Australia did bounce back with the ball and they dismissed Sri Lanka for 195. Stark took 3 for 40. Head and Zampa took 2 wickets each. Travis Head got a controversial LBW off to Pereira that may have hit the inside edge of the bat, but what struck me was the amount of whining coming from the Sri Lankan commentary box about that one decision, when if you don't have Hotspot or Snicko, then you can't really complain when there's no real clear deviation. But it was a good hour of Sri Lankan whining about that decision. Too much.
Well, again, I go back to if you can't have different technologies for different series, it's got to be bulletproof. If you're going to have a tracking system, then it should be used everywhere. We all know what BCCI thinks about it. They've come out again and saying we don't support the projection of the ball. They feel it's inaccurate. But Snicko again. But then this goes back to the broadcasters. Now, 10 Sports usually are not the best at processing some of these pictures.
Oh, the Hawkeye takes about half an hour for them to get it.
But that's because
you go and make a cup of tea, come back, and they give you the decision.
While Channel 9 and Sky Sports in England are absolutely phenomenal. So it goes back to broadcasters, what kind of system they had. Now, remember, it's all about getting paid. ICC won't fund these, and that's one of the other big issues. So, but going back, I mean, yeah, Sri Lankan commentators, I mean,
what was it, Abhisingha and Arnold? They were just going off. Anyway, it's not the commentary critique, so I'll move on. So Australia were chasing 196 to win. Again, George Bailey with 44 off 73, combined with David Warner to put on 132. That was the partnership that got Australia to victory after Wade and Khawaja went pretty early. David Warner's 106 off 126 balls was his third one-day century versus Sri Lanka and his seventh overall in one-day international cricket. And I think it was a really important innings for Warner because I was starting to have doubts about his ability to perform with the bat and captain the side at the same time. Now, Steve Smith, from the very beginning when he was given the captaincy, displayed an immense ability to combine his captaincy with run making. But David Warner, so far in the series, hadn't shown that. And look, it'd been only a couple of games, but it was certainly due and probably set the selectors' mind at ease a little bit.
Yeah, I think playing at home really helped Steve Smith as well. Had an established team playing in your home conditions, really good batting wickets we had, I think, 2 summers ago. That really helped too. But Warner, I think it was a fantastic innings. It just showed to me
even in Sri Lanka in the Test Series, Smith was our top run scorer, despite the fact that the team was struggling.
David Warner could have just walked away from that, you know, last game saying the tour's going to be over. But he stuck in. He wanted to score that 100, and full credit to him.
Great victory for Australia. Man of the match was David Warner. Man of the series was George Bailey, as I discussed. Really good bounce back from the Australian one-day side, and now they move off to South Africa for a one-day series starting next month, and the team was announced today. And interestingly, Lyon, Henriques and Khawaja have all been dropped, and in comes Tremaine, Worrell and many. So a few changes there. Obviously, Stark and Hazelwood unavailable. What about Khawaja, though? 6 months ago, he was compared to Brian Lara and being mooted for number 3 in every format. And he's looking like he's out, almost dropped from every format now.
Pretty remmakable fall from grace for Khawaja, hasn't it? It hasn't taken very long. So hopefully he can bounce back, another good home season. And I wish the same for Henriques too. Like I think he was called back into the squad a bit prematurely, but I think on form he's definitely good enough to play for Australia.
The other important, you spoke about selection, is I think it's good night for Nathan Lyon's one day career. Moving ahead, I think Adam Zampa secured the spot in terms of off-spin bowling. We've seen Travis Head is more than handy. Glenn Maxwell can do the job. So going forward,
and then you've got Cameron Boyce, Ashton
Agar.
Yeah,
exactly. In some really depth, in especially in the shorter format of the game, I think now Nathan Lyon should be just asked to focus on the longer format, especially with that Tour of India coming up in the future.
Perhaps 3 matches ago, Lyon would have been thinking, I'm still in with a chance here, because Head, in the first couple of matches, was chucking the ball up and getting a lot of tap. He was not taking wickets. He was going for 5 or 6 and over. He played himself into form, so good that the selectors stuck with him. And towards the end, he was picking up wickets, and obviously he's getting a lot of runs as well. So Head has sort of converted himself from a T20 almost definite into one of the first picks now for the one day team as well.
And certainly moving forward on the subcontinent, I think he's a real chance for the Indian tour next year, and one of the real finds of this tour so far. Now let's move on to the sledging quiz. Let's leave Sri Lanka behind for a minute, and we've got our favourite segment, one of my favourite segments, the sledging quiz. And now, I've got to be honest, listeners, I'm sort of running out of sledges. Here's the problem. Firstly, some are so rude, by the time you edit out all the bad stuff, there's just 2 words left. And there's some that are so bad and so abusive, I just, in my right mind, can't say them. And I've got to say, Bob, Adam Perore, a lot of the sledges come from him. He is a really nasty piece of work. He's let one go at Mark Waugh that borders on straight abuse. I'd love to read it out on the show, but I think it would actually break iTunes. What is it with Adam Perore?
Well, there goes the New Zealand's reputation as the gentleman of world cricket. So, yeah, don't hold back, Menace. Let it out.
Now, I've got 6 sledges, 2 each. The rules are, I'm going to start with Drew. They're all Ashes sledges because of Drew's visit. So this is when you can talk about the English cricket team. You can just relax now.
Can Drew start on -1 since they're all about the Ashes?
So we're going to, if you don't know the answer, the next panelist gets a chance to steal the point. Bob is coming last, so this is a big chance for Bob to run up the table.
Nice early sledge from Menas there.
Well, I got Drew's sledge in early. I've got Gav's sledge in. Now, Bob, that's all of you sledged. Now, question one. This is David Hooks versus someone. This is what they said to Hooks. When are your balls going to drop, Sonny? Hooks replied, I don't know, but at least I'm playing cricket for my own country. Now, that's a bit of a gimme, Drew. Who said that
to Hooks? When
are
your balls going to drop, Sonny? It was Tony Greig.
Excellent. So, Tony, 1 point to Drew.
England cricketers, it could have been, oh, hang on, is it Robin Smith? Is it Alan Lamb? Is it Andrew Strauss? Is it? Yes, yeah.
It could have been a lot more than that.
Yeah.
Now, question two, Gab, you're on the spot here. Who said this to Paul Collingwood? You've got an MBE, right, for scoring 17 at the Oval. That's embarrassing.
Is it Matthew Hayden?
Afraid it wasn't, Gav. Would you like to steal the point, Bob?
I probably would have gone Hayden as well.
But you don't have to. Because
there you go, you said Hayden. That. He said Hayden. Me. Teacher, me.
Come on, quick, Bob. Give us a guess.
Yeah, let's go.
It was a really famous sledge.
Was it?
Yeah. Don't help him.
Can I have it? Can I hear it one more time?
You've got an MBE, right, for scoring 17 at the Oval. That's embarrassing.
I think it was actually 7 that he scored, but he got an MBE.
Justin Langer.
Drew, who is it?
That horrible man who stole Elizabeth Hurley from us, Shane Warne.
Well, she's back now, so he's still in with the chance. So 2-0 for Drew, the Pommies in front. Ah, here we go, Bob, you got a chance to get off the mark. Who is Dennis Lilly talking about here? Blank blank is the only fellow I've met who fell in love with himself at a young age and has remained faithful ever since. Who is Dennis Lilly talking about?
Just pick anyone, 1 to 11. Well, nowadays, I don't know what he was like as a younger man, but would it be Botham?
I'm afraid not. Anyone want to have a go at this one? Drew, Gav?
Starting with B?
Starts with B and D.
Yep, a famous commentator.
Well, how many hints am I going to give?
Okay, Jeff Boycott.
Yes. So that's a point for Gav. So we've got 2 points for Drew, 1 for Gav, 0 for Bob. No surprises there.
Question, you're consistent, Bob.
Question 4, Drew. This is some friendly fire. Who did Graham Gooch say this about? If it had been a cheese roll, it would never have got past him.
It was the ball of the century, again bowled by Shane Warne, and it was Mike Gatting who was out to it.
Excellent. Drew, you know your sledging. Very impressive. All right, Gav, this is Michael Vaughan sledging someone. He was welcomed to the crease with a gobfrill from a new Aussie captain. This is Vaughan's reply. Get back to the slips. Who do you think you are? Steve Waugh? Who was Vaughan talking to?
Must have been Michael Clarke.
Ah, oh, he's a god, Bob. Who was the captain after Steve Waugh? It wasn't Michael Clarke, was it?
No, but it was a very good fielder, so I imagine he would have been in the slips from time to time. None other than Ricky Ponting.
Excellent. Bob gets off the mark with a
See, I just gave that a miss
single...
on purpose. I wanted Bob to get a point.
Thanks, just...
Gabby, such a nice guy.
Scampers down the other end. And
That's why I pulled out the next captain, so I thought in between he should be able to get that.
Thanks, Gav. It's like
15 balls to get off the mark, but at last he's troubled the scorers.
Came on strike to the free hit there. I love it.
Now, Bob, you can end it on another point, which Victorian fast bowler said this to Graham Gooch? Would you like me to bowl a piano and see if you can play that?
Oh, you know, I actually have heard this. I do know the sledge. Well, I did know the sledge, and I'm going to have to pass on to my co-panelists. Should I have a guess? I'll have a guess.
Yes.
I'll have a guess. It was, I have no idea.
Good guess. Anyone else?
Merv.
Merv Hughes.
Big
indeed.
Merv.
So that's
And you redacted that pretty well, because it was, shall I bowl you and... effing piano, you effing pommy pufter, wasn't it? Or something along those lines.
Most of these sledges, there's a fair few words left out. As I said, I don't want to break iTunes. So that's the sledging quiz for this week. I'm not sure how many more sledges I can find. Drew was the star with 4. Gav and Bob, you each got 1 each. Excellent work with the sledging quiz.
Thanks, Gav.
You're welcome.
Now let's have a look at the T20 series over in Sri Lanka. Australia facing the Sri Lankans in Palakkelly and Colombo in 2 exciting matches in prospect. The only thing that is a problem for Australia is most of our first 11's back here, with the players resting. And then yesterday, Aaron Finch and Chris Lynn were both ruled out of the series. Matty Wade and George Bailey are staying on to replace them. What do you guys think? Do you think Australia will be dominant in this series, or it's going to be hard for a second string side?
Well, one thing we have to talk about is there is no term as second string anymore. This is just what's going to happen in modern day cricket. When you're going to have a test tour, a one day tour and a T20, you're not going to have players that are going to play across all 3 different formats.
I agree with you, Gab, but my thing is, if it was a World Cup, then it would probably be 8 or 9 different players
absolutely.
In there. So you have to call it what it is, which
absolutely.
Is not our best side.
Chris Lynn's out of the tournament, but Chris Lynn basically just after the World T20 was said he was so disappointed he was not picked, because he was amongst the first person that had his name put down on that list in those 3 T20 matches against India last summer. So that raises his hopes, and then suddenly everyone decides to come back because it's a World Cup and he gets left out, which is totally unfair.
Well, I'm really disappointed, Chris Lynn. He dislocated his shoulder. He basically got to Sri Lanka, did a warm-up, dislocated his shoulder. Now he's coming home. So that's his tour. But he had been the top run scorer in the Caribbean Premier League, and he'd really taken the form that he displayed in the Big Bash over to the CPL. And I was hoping he could replicate that for Australia. But unfortunately, it's not to be. So we're going to see instead David Warner leading a very young and inexperienced side. And what do you guys think of the possibility of David Warner being the full-time T20 skipper?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know my thoughts on it. I wasn't particularly pleased when Finch was removed from the job, right? So I like the idea of specialists in particular roles that they're very good at. I think Warner's a terrific. He's got the mindset for T20. I really do. So I'd be more than happy with that.
Does Steve Smith, just a question to everyone, does Steve Smith fit into our best 11 in T20 format?
Of course he does. He's one of the best batsmen in the world in every format.
No, he's not. His record in T20 is not as sublime as some of the other cricketers that we have.
No, but he's an amazing T20 player. The problem with Steve Smith will be his time management. And if he's going to rest from a lot of T20 games, and look, this is not just this series, but I want to look ahead with an eye to the T20 series scheduled next year against it's against Sri Lanka again, I think, in Australia. And again, most of our first 11 will be in India preparing for the test. So if it's going to be a constant case of playing a second string side, maybe someone like Warner would be a better captain so they can have some consistency.
I'm with Kiwi Bob. I think Aaron Finch is so unlucky to be sacked out of that captaincy role. It just happened because World T20, suddenly Smith was going to go. And I think...
And Khawaja. That's the other thing. Yeah. Khawaja was in breathtaking form and he'd been barnstorming the BBL. And they were like, well, we're going to have to push Finch out, possibly.
The thing with Warner is he, like Smith, he plays all three formats. So it could be just putting a little bit too much on his shoulders. He'll probably take it on with open arms, but I think having a specialist there like Finch was, I think it was going really well. Australia was the best team in the world, and now they got some rebuilding to do.
You can't captain all three, that's for sure. Yeah. And I think it's very good that Smith, he's been sort of taken out of the firing line here, having gone home after two of the one-day internationals, trying to captain all three. I mean, as you're saying, trying to play all three formats is going to be exhausting, and then trying to captain as well. We saw that Warner sort of got into his captaincy, as you were saying last week on the podcast, the first time he was in charge of the team, it was, I'm just going to play my five bowlers and stick to them, rather than trying to do this quirky, let's bring someone on for an over and buy a wicket, and don't try and do everything left field out of the box. But if you're trying to do that in all three formats, you're going to be absolutely exhausted.
I guess the real focus for this series will be the return of Glenn Maxwell. He was left out of the one-day side to South Africa, so he's still on the outer of the one-day side, but he remains in the frame for the T20 stuff. He's not been in good form in the A cricket that he's been playing in Australia, but it is a huge opportunity for him now, being one of the senior members of this side, to really make his mark on his return to the Aussie team.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting. The little sub-battle that will happen between him and Head, though I'm sure they'll both be in the starting 11. So it'll be really interesting
head-to-head
to see
battle.
Very interesting to see which of the two, puts their hand up.
I think it should be a one-all series. That's my prediction. These two-match series, they'll probably each take one, and that'll be it.
Who's going to open with Warner?
Khawaja.
We will definitely be Khawaja.
Warner,
even
Khawaja.
Though he's...
Yeah. Wade might be an outside
Wade,
chance.
Wade at three, maybe, yeah.
Yeah, when Finch pinged his finger in the slips in the fifth one-day international, they sent Wade in as a pinch hitter, and it didn't quite work, even though Sri Lanka opened with spinners. Yeah. And I was thinking, well, if Khawaja isn't a dead set pick now, who are they going to open with, or are they forced to start with Khawaja? I'd love to see Khawaja play himself back into form, because BBL last year, he was just, I could have watched him all day. Absolutely wonderful. At the moment, you're thinking, well, the poor guy can't buy a run. Are they going to go for a pinch hitter?
I don't think there's enough. They're struggling to make a team, aren't they, now, with all the players that have come home? And
Darren
Lehman
might be out there batting in the second game if someone gets injured.
I reckon they should give Travis Head a go. I reckon he should.
Opening?
Yeah, I think that. I mean, we've got Glenn Maxwell in the middle, so might as well bat Travis Head up the top, see what he can do against a new ball.
Or Maxi opening.
Yeah, exactly. That's another one. Matty Wade's only in the squad as an injury replacement. So they were going to go with Peter Neville. Does that mean Neville's behind the stumps and Wade's going to play as a specialist batsman?
I think that's what's going to happen. Well, that's the T20 series. Two matches this week to round out the Sri Lankan tour. I'm pretty happy that my sleep patterns are going to return back to a semblance of some normal sleep, because these late nights have been killing me. Now let's move on now to the commentator critique. This is the segment taking the cricket world by storm. All the commentators are on the edge of their seats waiting to hear the criticism that is going to come forth. And last night I was on Twitter and I managed to get on to Bumble, David Lloyd, and ask him who his favourite commentators were. And he did answer, and he said, of his commentators that are alive, Bill Laurie is his favourite commentator, and all time is the late, great Tony Kozier. Pretty good choices from David Lloyd. I'm surprised Laurie's his favourite.
Bill Laurie, he'll make the top three of most people who've listened to Bill Laurie commentate. It's just, regardless which test match it is around the world, the first voice you want to hear is Bill Laurie, simple as that.
Well, let's get on to the lineup this week. Now, because Drew's visiting, I've picked five Pommies for the commentator critique this week. And let's start with what I think is the quintessential voice of English cricket on the radio. I'm talking of Henry Blofeld. I think he's one of the most distinctive voices in world cricket. And I actually think Henry Blofeld, you know, really good radio commentator. What do you guys think?
Yeah, absolutely. Like he's a throwback to a time gone by, isn't he? He's sort of a link to the past in the way that he's just so verbose in the way that he takes the time to explain and paint the picture for you, and you really get a sense of the ground. And for me, it brings back, just even thinking of Blofeld brings back really good memories. I used to lie in bed listening to BBC Five Live before they geo-blocked it. Thank you.
Exactly, yes.
But listening to Blofeld and English cricket, and I love him. I think he's fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. You nailed it on the head. It's the link for the young people to listen to what cricket commentary was like. And he could do TV and radio as well. It was so good. He's still continuing at the moment, which I probably feel is not the right thing, because he gets confused with the players. I'll let sort of Drew finish that off.
That's the thing. He is a link to the past, and he does paint a beautiful soundscape. And when you're listening on the radio, he will whisk you away, and it is going back to a bygone
like
age.
Like you're doing now with your...
Exactly, exactly. My dear old thing, it's exactly that, Menace. And the problem is... it's been taken in the slips by Strauss. And then someone in the background says, Strauss isn't playing anymore. It's not Strauss, it's the new fella, Cook, who's been there for about 5 years, and the bowler's the right arm fast medium fella. Yes, we've only got four of those. Can you give us which one it is? And as you say, Cav, it may be, you don't want to play one game too many.
You're insinuating that Blofeld has.
Yes.
Now let's talk about someone that definitely didn't play one game too many. Actually, left mid tour. I'm talking of Graham Swann. Now, Swanee has made the transition to broadcasting. I have to say, he just annoys me. There's something about his commentary that I find annoying. I don't know what it is. I can't put my finger on it. But amidst all the English commentators, he's one that I really don't like listening to.
Yeah, I was very similar to you, Like, I was a bit concerned whether he'd be able to lift the mic to his mouth, given his elbow pain, but... at first, I was very similar to you, and I think that... I was looking for a reason to dislike Graham Swann's commentary, especially when he first came on. He came across as a little smug and a bit of a know-it-all kind of thing. But I've actually warmed to him over the time. I've actually now find him quite humorous. And I like that he's, if Blofeld was a link to the past, Swann is a direct connection to the current. And the way that he talks about the current dressing room with Cookie and Jimmy Anderson and guys like that, I find really fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and a commentary team needs that. They need someone who's been in that dressing room only in the recent times, a year ago, 2 years ago, understand about the mannerisms and whatever there is about players. But I just think, yes, Swanee, I think he just tries a little bit too hard.
Exactly. He is a very good analyst of the game, and he's a very good, in particular, spin bowling as well. He absolutely hates anyone who's ever bowled a Dusra should be banned for life. They're chuckers, all of them.
I think he's really funny as well.
Well, he started off as he was doing the Ashes tour diary, and he is the kind of person who was all Instagram, Twitter, follow, subscribe to my YouTube tour diaries. He's 10 years older than the people that he's trying to cater to, but he's down with the kids, and every time he's on the mic, he thinks he's got to imitate Mushy, or he's got to imitate Mikey Holding, or he's got to imitate Jimmy Anderson, and tries a little bit too hard, as you said, Gav. If he is a great analyst of the game, but at the moment he's trying to be all things to all men and all youngsters and all teenagers.
Now, to another smug prick that I actually like, we've got the ex-English captain, Michael Vaughan. I think he does come across as being a bit smug, and a bit like Swann, does think he's really funny. But you do get a lot of very good insights from Vaughan.
Talking about English cricket, you might be able to answer this, but is he the closest to what Mike Brearley would have been, like Michael Vaughan, in terms of how he sort of tells us about the mindset of a team or a captain out there?
he does that very well. He's a cross between, he's a poor man's Mike Brearley, because Mike Brearley is this cerebral ivory tower intellectual, and if you try to read his Art of Captaincy, it's a wonderful read, but by gad, it's a tough one. You know, it's not.
Welcome to the English Cricket Podcast.
You pick the commentator. You pick the commentator. But yes, we are now talking about Brearley.
Bob, what do you think of Michael Vaughan?
I think he's very smart. He's very clever. He's fiercely intelligent. But he has a way of I think, explaining things to the common man that I really enjoy, right? Because I can get quite a lot out of it. Yeah,
and you are the common man.
Yeah, I think so.
Gav, what do you think of Vaughan? You like his stuff?
Yeah, I do. I really appreciate him. Radio, he does it fantastic. He does Channel 9 here. It's just the simplest way. Mental side of the game. We hear commentators talk about it. What is the mental side? Michael Vaughan is somebody who put it out there in layman's terms that everybody can understand.
Drew, you want to add anything to Vaughan?
I'm slightly coloured by the fact that I don't particularly like his writing, because a lot of his writing starts off with things along the lines of, is it just me, or, and then he goes and comes out with something that's shock value. Jonathan Trott shouldn't have gone home.
Don't read his Twitter feed, because his Twitter feed
exactly.
Absolute bullshit.
It is. And that I had to, because I was thinking it's a commentator critique that we're doing, put that to one side. As a commentator, he's very, very good.
Now, this is a bloke that I wouldn't mind having a drink and a pint with at the pub and having a chat. Is the old Phil Tufnell. Now, here's someone that really appeals to me as a commentator, because I just feel like he's really natural and you're really getting unfiltered Phil Tufnell. It's exactly the same person you'd meet at the pub, and he's very insightful, knows a lot about spin bowling, but just knows a lot about cricket. You can tell he's an absolute cricket tragic, and really entertaining to listen to. He has stories, and he's got that sort of pub talk. You know, it's just like you're at the pub with him.
Yeah, he's a bit of a character, isn't he? He's the Aussie larrikin equivalent, I suppose, on the list. My note here says, not sure what he's doing. And I think that kind of sums it up quite well. I think he's just sort of woken up and thought, I'll do a bit of commentary today.
It's almost that. I'm not sure what he's doing, you're saying, Bob. He does, and you said he's a bit of an Aussie larrikin type person. He does the Tuffers and Vaughan show, yeah. Which, when I see that, makes me think of Fitzy and Whipper and Matey and Nicknamey, all these sort of Aussie duos doing their radio from 6 till 9, and they do the Tuffers and Vaughan show, and you've got Vaughan coming on going, is it just me, or has Alistair Cook got it all wrong? And then Tuffers going, oh, I don't know, mate. Oh, it's yeah. And Tuffers on that show is a bit, he plays it up, I'm not very clever, really, you know, and that is a bit, that can be a little bit grating. But again, like Graham Swan, he will talk about spin bowling until the cows come home, yeah. And it's all very clever stuff. And you think you're coming across as this, I just like a pint, I just like a fag, oh, gaw blimey, I only ever made 6 runs in my entire career, they'd have batted me at number 12 if they could, ha, ha, ha. But when he actually gets on as a commentator, yes, he's got some good insights.
Do you think he commentates sober very often, or...?
Never knowingly sober. Yes, exactly.
Now, let's round out the commentary critique with one of the real current voices of the BBC, and that is, of course, of Jonathan Agnew. Universally liked, I've got to say, about Aggers. He's one of the iconic voices of our time. He seems to be calling some of the most historic moments in world cricket. And I think Aggers is a really good commentator.
Yeah, absolutely. A terrific radio caller. Him, I think he's the Jim Maxwell of English cricket, especially in the last 25, 30 years. And it doesn't matter what the match situation is, Aggers just keeps his cool. He's so descriptive. And he's got that soft sort of voice that you just want to keep listening to.
I didn't realise he had a test career, but he actually did play test cricket for England.
He was a nondescript bowler in the 80s. I mean, he made the test team, yes, and he will be quite self-deprecating about it. I mean, we went through so many bowlers in the 80s and 90s and those famous Ashes tours when we've had 29 players and Australia only needed 12 or 13. But then he's one of the previous generation where the BBC said, look, if you want to be a journalist, go and train, and they trained him, as opposed to you're a former captain, and it's the same with Australian cricketers now. It's you've retired, you are a de facto commentator straight away, whereas he learnt his trade, and you can see that now in that he does it with real quality. And the Steve Waugh moment that was mentioned a couple of podcasts ago, when he was on 98 on the last ball of the day and hit a four, he called that for the BBC and did it beautifully well. You're saying, Gav, he's got this soft voice.
I love his call at the World T20 final recently when Brathwaite hit those.
I didn't hear that one. Can you play it again?
Sixes. Oh, didn't you hear the loop on the last show you were on?
Yes, I did.
I also think Agnew's a great interviewer. When he interviews, he brings in a lot of people from different...
He's learned his trade.
From different fields.
And that's something we probably have lacking going ahead. We don't see many of the cricketers who are actually trained to do the, not the expert role, but the caller role. And the caller role is so crucial. And ABC's one of the commentator, I mean, that's where a lot of the commentators hail from, likes of Jim Maxwell and Quinton Hull and some of the Drew Morfitts and so forth. We just don't have anyone emerging. I'm not sure in English cricket.
Podcasters. Emerging, sorry.
A few up-and-coming podcasters.
I'll do lead, you two guys do colour. But yes, it's exactly that. You need a lead commentator, and then the colour can be Geoffrey Boycott, it can be Tuffers, it can be Vaughney, it can be Tubby Slats Heels, etc., etc.
Exactly.
But you need someone who's learnt the trade to be the lead commentator.
That's what Aggers is absolutely perfect for. He'll take a single, get down the other end, and bring the main guy on strike.
Excellent analogy, Bob. And what a way to round out our commentary critique this week. Now, we're going to take a break in a moment. If you want to get in touch with the Australian Cricket Podcast, we're on Gmail, auscricketpod, auscricketpod@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter at auscricketpod, auscricketpod. We're on Facebook as the Australian Cricket Podcast. You can listen to the show on almost every app available for podcasts. And please take a moment out of your day and leave a review for the Australian Cricket Podcast. We'd love to get your feedback. And we're going to be back with the Read and React segment to end the show, but I'm going to play now one of the absolute most classic bits of BBC commentary. It was Friday the 9th of August in 1991. It was the close of play in a Test versus the West Indies. Brian Johnston and Jonathan Agnew were wrapping up the day's play, and have a listen to what happened next.
Both of them in the end out most extraordinary ways.
He knew, this is the tragic thing about it, he knew exactly what was going to happen. He tried to step over the stumps and just flicked a bail with his right
hand. He almost tried to do the splits over it, and unfortunately the inner part of his thigh must have just removed the bail.
He just didn't quite get his leg over.
Anyhow, he did very well indeed, batting 131 minutes and hit three fours. And then we had Lewis playing extremely well for his 47 not out. Agus, do stop it. And he was joined by De Freitas, who was in for 40 minutes, a useful little partnership there. They put on 35 in 40 minutes, and then he was caught by Dujon Walsh. Lawrence, always entertaining, batting for 35. 35 minutes, hit a four over the wicketkeepers. Agus, for goodness sake, stop it. Hit a four.
Yes, Lawrence played extremely well.
He hit a four over the wicketkeeper's head, and he was out for now. Tuffle came, batted for 12 minutes, and then was caught by Haynes off Patterson for two, and there were 54 extras, and Inglemore all out for 419. I've stopped laughing now.
Welcome back to the Australian Cricket Podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Mensel, a.k.a. Menners. I'm joined by Drew and Bob, and Gav is half here. He's half on his phone, he's half here. Welcome back to the show. We're going to end this show with the segment Read and React, where we dissect some of the media from cricket in the last week. And this Read and React is bordering on a debate about the merits of a good or bad one-day game. And let's start off with what John Etheridge, the lead writer of The Sun, wrote about England breaking the world record for the highest ever score in one-day cricket. England made 3 for 444, but this is what John Etheridge wrote after that. It was brutal, ruthless bullying of this hapless Pakistan team. Mishits flew into the crowd for six, good deliveries were dispatched for four. The carnage was so extreme that it took on a curiously predictable, unemotional tone. There is only so much excitement watching 16 sixes and 43 fours in a space of 50 overs, but the crowd loved it, dot, dot, dot. Now, this is John Etheridge's reaction to that record-breaking innings. Only an English rider can be moaning after his side has broken the record. I mean, am I misreading this?
Well, he writes for The Sun as well, which you don't really have an equivalent of The Sun in Australia. So it's the equivalent of being the lead cricket writer for TV Weekly or something like that. He is, however, a very good journalist. So the fact that he's almost going against the grain, because The Sun is sensationalism. The Sun is topless ladies on page three, and then it's soccer, Wayne Rooney, horse racing, and then the cricket. And he's going, there were 43 fours and 16 sixes, but isn't that boring?
But what a reaction, though. I mean, if Australia had scored 444, I don't think I'd be complaining that it was, predictable. I mean, how can it be predictable when it's never happened before?
Well, it's sort of unpredictable in a way, because England is not known for having big scores. So I just don't understand it. I mean, do I like the concept? No, I don't like it. But it's suddenly... This is where I think...
So what concept?
Of having a high-scoring one-day matches. Now, that's suddenly started to emerge through English cricket over the past 2 years. Ever since the 2015 World Cup debacle, The English pitches have gone flat. We always know the grounds are quite short. The ball keeps disappearing. And suddenly they feel that's the way to sort of be competing against world cricket. Have a lot of power hitting. I'm not sure that's the right way. I think they're 5 years behind world cricket in that sort of way, looking ahead.
But look, compare it to the one-day series we've seen in Sri Lanka. Now, they were lower scoring affairs, but they were very exciting games. It didn't need either side to score 300 plus to make it a good contest. And it's interesting, Warner's reaction about the series in Sri Lanka is, this is what Warner said, "We are about growing the game, and in one day in T20 cricket, you like to see more of a contest where you see teams scoring over 300 runs and chasing them down. Sitting back last night and watching England score 400 and we are busting our backs off to score 200, it is probably not ideal for people coming out to watch that kind of cricket." So what is the right balance? We've got one of the world's best players saying they want to score, they want to play on easier wickets, and we've got commentators saying it's mundane and boring.
I think if you get sports fans in a room for any sport, anywhere in the world, they're all really going to come down and tell you the same thing, which is they just want to see a good contest. They want to see a good game. They want to see a competitive game where two sides, where you don't know who's going to win until, towards the end. And it's a hard-fought scrap. And so my issue with, these flat tracks and scoring 400 plus in the first innings is game's over at half time. That's my problem with it. Interesting that Warner would say, we want to be scoring 300 plus. Well, yeah, he's a batsman. He's going to say that, right? So I think the main thing is the cricket field is round. It's 360 degrees. And if batters can't hit straight down the ground, if they can't play in the V because the pitch is too slow, that's a problem. So I'd like to be able to see, there's got to be a happy middle ground there. There's something in it for the bowlers early on. And the batters can play their shots.
Of all the World Cups which happened in the last 15 years, which have been your favourite? Predominantly, most people would say the 1999 World Cup.
Yeah, because lower scoring, bowlers came into the game.
It wasn't just lower scoring, man. I was still there. You were still getting 275, 270, which is ideal, isn't it?
Yeah, you get a really tight tussle then when it's not too out of the way. One thing that I agree with Etheridge about his... the blasé nature where you have all these boundaries. If you're watching a game and the side is just hitting boundaries and sixes, sometimes it can lose its powerfulness. Whereas when you're watching a test match and a batsman's been working hard for half an hour and then all of a sudden opens up with a beautiful cover drive, that can be worth as watching, 10 or 20 boundaries in a one-day game. So I kind of see Etheridge's comment, but it's just so English after you've broken the world record to have that sort of dig at the achievement.
Well, by the same token, Warner mentioned this after the fourth one-day international, which is when Australia made 108.1 overs. and the first over was a maiden as well, so they sort of got a sighter and then got 107 overs. So they were going at 14 and over.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, David Warner says developing the game. Now, if you've, if you're taking a young kid along to the game and you just see, you know, batsmen hitting 60 boundaries or 20 sixes, would that kid really want to, in terms of development, would we ever want to be a bowler? No. So we're just going to have everyone who wants to be a batsman, don't we?
Well, I think that's a good way to wrap up the Read and React for this week. Guys, thanks for coming in for the podcast this week. Next week on Read and React, listeners, we're going to have it to listen and react. We're actually going to be reviewing the interview that Mark Howard did with Adam Gilchrist on his podcast, The Howard Game. So if you want to listen to that interview in the next week in preparation for the show, we have a special guest panelist coming in, and we're going to review that interview with Gilly. We're also going to review the T20 series. We've got a lot of news to get through. And that's going to be the Australian Cricket Podcast next week. Drew, thanks for coming into the show all the way from Europe for the show. You certainly travel farther than any panelist.
Exactly. I'll as long as you pay my airfares, I'll come any week, every week.
He just cut out there.
Is he going to be a regular when the Ashes will be on, Menace?
I would certainly hope so. Please, Mr. Menace, Mr. Andrew Gav, Mensel.
Gav, thanks for coming in. Enjoy you're going up north for the Australia A series, the 4-day games. Is it 2 4-day games?
Yes, absolutely.
So will you be commentating?
Maybe. I'll let you know.
Well, I'll be listening out for some more clangers. And Bob, Bob, welcome back to the show. Mr. Popular, universally liked amongst all listeners. Thanks for coming on. It's been a real privilege for the listeners to hear your dulcet tones.
He is, I'd forgotten that. He's Housewife's Choice, isn't he? He is the Aggers, the soft voice.
The reason I say it is Bob gets so embarrassed. Right, he's so embarrassed by the praise lauded on him. But thanks for coming in, Bob.
Thanks for having us. It's been fun, guys.
And listeners, we'll be back next week with another podcast.
What a marvellous stroke. He's played no better shot than that in the whole of the series.